Blog Talk Radio.
Going into the corner, Gordie Howe goes in to fight for it. He and Ziegenkopf have it. Back to Walt, not in front. Here's Bobby Hull, shoots, scores! Bobby Hull!
Judon trying to make a play. Lemieux steals, and he's up against Raymond Bork and Adam Oates. Coming to the Bruins, they got around both men, cutting for the net. He's in on goal. Hey! Charlton scores! What a goal! Brunet carries in, rolling in front of the net, and a shot! Desjardins following the play, and he misses the short cut. Here he is again. Scores! Desjardins!
It is Miller Lite.
All right, hockey fans, you're listening to the hard-kicking, kick-saving, sudden-death scoring NHL Breakdown. I'm your host, Scott Levy, joined as always by George Kirsch of RotoExperts.com. We're bringing you all the on- and off-ice action, as well as keeping you fans and fantasy owners fully informed at the top of your respective leagues with our fancy reports, including the IR, line updates, waiver wire recommendations, and, of course, George's goalie reports. Today is, of course, Monday, December 10th, inching closer to the Christmas freeze break, and we've got some building rumors that ever since the Nylander signing, there has been a lot of trade chatter around the National Hockey League and some speculation that for a time of year that generally doesn't have a lot of trading, that there are people speculating, and I stress speculating here, that there could indeed be some trading. Now, I'm not talking about any major blockbusters necessarily. But like I said, for a time of year, that's usually a little bit slow. Doesn't trade, doesn't pick up, as we all know, until really the turn of the year, once you get close or past the All-Star break. But a lot of people saying that a number of teams that are kind of like, feel like they're in that no man's land of, we could fall into in being consequential out of the playoff race, or if we start playing better, we can sort of get ourselves into the playoff race and secure a playoff position. A lot of teams from that no man's land area looking for to acquire guys. I know I sort of mentioned, I think it was the last show, that like Carolina, Anaheim in particular, both looking for scoring, specifically top six scoring, which you have to imagine is a little bit difficult to get in season, unless you're going to make a big splash. But a number of teams, about 8, 9, 10 teams looking, or at least rumored to be seriously looking to make some sort of move. Again, of course, that doesn't necessarily translate to the fact that it's going to happen, but certainly is pretty interesting and should make at least our job a little more interesting, especially if we get some more serious information today. I'm going to talk about recently talked and covered the Seattle expansion, and ever since that happened, people have been sort of whispering, and these whispers have been around for a while, but some more whispering that a possible playoff expansion, more teams in the playoffs, because, you know, there's so few teams in the NHL playoffs. We need more, don't we? I say sarcastically. Do a little check up, on the NHL discipline situation, talk a little bit about the Hyman suspension, whether it was legit, whether it should happen. And, you know, ask George, and if we have Jan joining us today, which he might later on, sort of give him a little report card so far in the season. Is Joe getting a little better and a little consistent with their discipline and their suspensions and their fines and that sort of thing? Or is it too early to tell? Because I have my doubts there. And then, of course, the fantasy reports, as always. I kind of want to talk about the Canadians a little bit, too. But I just don't think we have quite time for that. In the meantime, let's kick things off with the fantasy report, starting off with the IR and lines report, as we usually do in Anaheim. Raquel with that ankle injury still listed day-to-day, missed the last couple of games over the weekend, which I said on Friday I did expect. He is questionable for Wednesday's game. It does look more probable that he could come back by the end of the week. If you are in a weekly league and you have a decent other option, I definitely want to go that way because there is a certain amount of uncertainty here when it comes to Raquel, but I'm also not too upset if I'm taking that risk in a weaker league. Obviously, daily lineup league is much easier to ride that wave. When it comes to the Anaheim Ducks, Corey Perry with his knee injury, reportedly progressing quite nicely, and there is an expectation, or at least a building expectation, that he could come back before his March 1, not deadline, but when he was expected to return. Listen, we know Corey Perry hasn't the same player that he used to be, so I don't think anybody's really cramming for this, but it is certainly notable for the Anaheim Ducks. Fowler, also with that facial injury, has started off-ice workouts. Now, it still means he's weeks away, but it is certainly a nice milestone and marker to know that he is progressing nicely and there doesn't seem to be any setbacks there. Especially for fantasy owners that certainly could use a defenseman. For the Boston Bruins, DeBrusk was quote-unquote ill and day-to-day missed the last couple of games over the weekend. And there's some speculation, and again, not confirmation here, but speculation that this might be related to him getting hit in the head with a puck back on November 26th because about three, four games ago, he came off the ice or at the end of the game and started complaining about not feeling well. Now, like I said, this is speculation, but they're sort of wondering whether this could be sort of a concussion issue, and therefore meaning he'd probably have to be another couple of games. It looks like and the Bruins have also said, you know what, we're just putting our best players together because we're all over the place with the lack of scoring, so we're just putting Krejci on that top line with Pasternak and Marchand. Watching the last couple of games, it's kind of worked and kind of not worked because there really hasn't been much scoring outside of that line other than a couple of blips on the net. So the secondary scoring is still very much an issue for the Boston Bruins. In Calgary, not surprising to find out that over the weekend, Giordano was indeed suspended two games. They did play two games over the weekend, so that suspension is now out. So he'll be returning to the lineup. But Backlund, with that concussion, has landed himself on the IR. And it looks like they're searching for somebody in the team to play that second-line center. I know Janikowski has gotten an opportunity. Derek Ryan was playing there as well. So looks like a little bit of a revolving door, and hopefully Backlund won't be out all that long. A little bit of good news in Carolina with Furland and his concussion back at practice. And not only was he back at practice, but he was in a regular jersey. Therefore, he was not in a non-contact jersey, so he had full contact practice today. However, I was a little surprised that he wasn't on that. They put back him on the top line with Aho and Teravainen. Martinook, at least at practice, was in that spot with Furland being on the fourth line. Now, this could just be a situation where they're looking to ease Furland back in the lineup because of the concussion issue. He also, as we reported last week, has Stahl out. So your second line is Foglin, Rask, and DiGiuseppe. Again, not exactly striking fear into opponents with that second line. In Chicago, Anisimov, he's in concussion protocol and will not be joining the team on their trip to Winnipeg. So, of course, obviously he's not going to be in that game, but look for him to miss a couple of games. And not surprising, as I reported on Friday, Perlini really hasn't been doing anything since he was traded to the Blackhawks, finally gets bucked off that top line with Kump. Taking his place, at least temporarily. Also not all that surprising, which I speculated out on Thursday with Dallas Stars, Hansel Spezza on the same line. Didn't think it was going to work. Didn't last very long at all. Hansel moved down to centering the fourth line, although he was sort of rotated in the third and second line. Outside of that top line in Dallas, last couple of games, Montgomery has been shifting everything around. Again, looking for depth scoring there, but at least for right now, Shore, Spezza, and Richie looks like it's going to be your second line. In Detroit, as we reported last week, Mantha was lost for the next 4 to 6 weeks for that broken finger, and that caused Nyquist to be moved up to the top line to play with Abdicator, and Larkin. And he's actually been looking pretty darn good since he returned to the top line there. In fact, I might talk about him a little bit later in waiver wire recommendations. Also for the Detroit Red Wings, Daly is going to return to the lineup after missing in Florida. Bustad with an upper body injury is listed as day-to-day, missed one game already, and is not joining the team on their trip, their two-game road trip. So, of course, obviously he'll be out for a couple games. Dantanoff, as I speculated last week, does return to the top line to play with Barkov. Their chemistry is just too good, so it's going to be Barkov, Huberdeau, and Dantanoff with that second line, at least temporarily, being McCain and Brouwer with Hoffman. Now, that might give Hoffman fantasy owners a little bit of pause, just being bumped out of that top line and playing with a not exactly exciting second line. However, Hoffman has still been able to produce. So unless you have a really good other option on your bench, I'm still keeping Hoffman in my lineup, but it certainly is worthy to take note of it. And like I said, if you do have a really good option or a better option, you might want to take that risk at least this week of sitting him. In L.A., Martinez's upper body injury is going to be out for the week. Same thing with Clifford and his upper body injury going to be out for a week. And a new second line in L.A. as Carter centering Leipzig and Luff. And they actually looked pretty good, at least for the game and a half that they've been together, as well as sort of the one game that was your third line of Kempe centering newly acquired Sherrick and Toffoli. They looked pretty good for a game there, too. Not that I'm getting too excited about any of those guys, either for the on-ice products or for fantasy, but it certainly was notable for a team that really is looking for scoring. In Minnesota, not too much information on Koivu with his knee injury or the lower body injury, but we all know it's a knee injury. He's officially listed as out, was sent home when they were on their short road trip. They're heading back home now. But it is very questionable whether he's going to play this week at all. Like I said, not too much information. While he is out, Coyle shifted over to the center position with Parise and Niederreiter joining them on the right wing there. And a new line put together of Eriksson Ek centering Greenway and Kunin. Kunin looked pretty good last year in his short stints that he had with the team. And that third line didn't produce at all in their last game against Edmonton, but they looked really good, and they got a lot of offensive starts. So really for Minnesota Wild fans, this is sort of intriguing to see if they can do anything with. Not so much for fantasy owners. Obviously, you'd want to see some production and at least a few games of production before you're even going to take a chance on any of these guys for your bench in deeper leagues, you know. But in the parts of the games that I did watch, I actually was kind of impressed with that line. So I did want to sort of at least make a mention of it. On Friday, I also talked about Nashville and the rumors and speculations from Poole, the GM, saying that he really thought he was going to get a player back on Tuesday. One of his injured players, speculation was that it was going to be Subban, since the other players that are injured with Arvidsson, Forsberg, and Turris, their injuries were expected to be at least a couple of weeks longer. But having said that, at practice today, there was no PK Subban, but there was Turris, although he was in non-contact jersey with his undisclosed injury. So it's really hard to imagine Turris practicing in non-contact jersey today and getting back at the lineup tomorrow. So it looks like it's going to be pushed back for a couple of days, a game or two, whoever's going to return for the Nashville Predators. Trying to find some sort of second line there. They move Bonino up to center, Yarncroft, and Craig Smith. And that should be notable for some fantasy owners because Tolvanen was called up, scored a goal, and had an assist in his first game. Next two games hasn't produced anything, and he's now been moved down to the third line with Sissons and Salamaki. So if you are one of those fantasy owners who was going out to grab him, you might want to question that move, and if there's better options on your free agent wire, might want to go that way until Tolvanen does prove himself. For the New York Islanders, not too much to report here, but Hosen was recalled, and that did raise some eyebrows, but it does not look like he's going to get himself into the lineup. Whether or not Kunako plays or not, Kunako has an undisclosed injury and listed officially as day-to-day right now. For the Ottawa Senators, DeMaio is another injury for a team that injuries is piling up. Upper body injury lands him on the IR. And with Duchesne out, your new second line is Tierney, Batherson, and Bodecker. And this really could have some potential, well, I would think it would have potential impact or likely negative impact on Dzingel. And listen, I know Dzingel, 24% owned on average in fantasy leagues. He's not a widely owned guy, certainly really going to be a bench guy for most people. But he was playing pretty well and had some pretty good chemistry with Duchesne and has 12 goals on the season. So he was a legitimate bench player, at least in deeper leagues. You've got to imagine his value is going to take a hit and might make him an outright drop for you fantasy owners out there. In Philadelphia, not a whole lot of information when it comes to Couturier with his lower body injury. Listed as day-to-day, missed both games over the weekend. He is considered a pretty good chance to return for one of their next two games, whether it be the 12th or the 14th. But if you are in a weekly league, I think I'm being a little gun-shy on playing him here just because of the lack of information. And I always say the more lack of information there is on NHL players, the more nervous I am that their injury is serious. So if I'm in a weaker league and I have a better option, I am going another way than Couturier this week. While Couturier was gone, James Van Riemsdyk moves up to the top line to play with Giroux, who slides over to the center position with Konecny as well. Voracek, Patrick, and Simmons is your second line. In Pittsburgh, Hornquist with an undisclosed injury, missed one game. Did skate briefly before practice, or at least a very start of practice, the Pittsburgh Penguins today, left practice and has been declared officially out for Monday's game. He has missed 5 of the last 8 games for the Penguins. The Pittsburgh Penguins put together sort of their star line, so to speak, with Kessel moving up to play right wing with Crosby and Gunzel. Your second line, at least at practice today, was Malkin centering Sheehan and Pearson as well. In San Jose, lines taking a much more familiar tack than they have of late as Meyer moves back to play with Couturier and Hurdle. Pavelski, Kane, and Donskoy put that together as well. Thornton, LeBanc, and Sorensen is your top nine, like we've sort of mostly gotten used to outside of some injuries with players missing some time. That's been your top nine for the better part of the last month. However, Thornton did miss practice today. Not really any information here, but it is believed that it was just a maintenance day for Thornton. Having a little trouble talking today and pronouncing and enunciating. In St. Louis, Jaden Schwartz with that upper body injury at practice today, looking pretty good. He said after practice that he would see how he feels tomorrow and then make the decision whether he's going to play today. But I had multiple reporters saying that he did look good. And if they had to guess, they thought it was likely that he's going to play. Now, for fantasy owners, you're obviously reluctant to take that risk if you have Schwartz on your team. But assuming Schwartz does return tomorrow, which, of course, is still a big question, it looks like the lines are going to be Shane, Schwartz, and Perron on one line, and Tarasenko moving back up top line with O'Reilly and Sanford for now. In Toronto, Heyman, with a 2-game suspension for that hit on McAvoy, which we'll talk about shortly. But with him out of the lineup, Connor Brown does move up to play on the top line with Tavares and Mariner. And a little switching around of the lines for the second and third line as Kapanen and Johansson move up to play with Austin Matthews, Marleau, and Nylander put on the third line with Kadre for the Toronto Maple Leafs. So not too bad of an IR and lines updates, really mostly tidbits, not too much bad news there. We turn our attention to the goalie report, George, and I feel like I got to start or ask you to start in Arizona with what seems to be going on there. You were talking on Friday how it seemed like they may have mismanaged Ranta there because you were talking about, the team even mentioned, we're not sure if we're going to bring him back. And they brought him back, and he got re-injured, and you were saying, why bring him back if you weren't sure if he was healthy to begin with? Now it looks like it might be some really bad news when it comes to Rianta, so I'm curious how bad you think it is with him. Are we going to see him anytime soon? And is there a clear heir apparent for the Arizona Coyotes? So, George, if you want to mind starting the goalie report there, what do you got to tell us about goalies around the National Hockey League?
Yeah, it looks to be a pretty serious injury. Fantasy-wise, no. I mean, really, it's Arizona. I don't want to say it's who cares, but it's pretty close to who cares. Having an all-home league, seeing you and my brother fight over a backup goaltender is hilarious for Arizona. Kind of found that interesting. But Ranta, he had a procedure done, and it looks like during the procedure they found the injury to be worse than they expected. Yeah, so that's really what it comes down to there. They didn't give really any details about what the injury is there, but it looks like he's done for the season. So that's really what's coming down to there. So Ranta more than likely done for the season, or at least certainly the foreseeable future. I guess there's a chance we can see him in the spring, but I find that highly unlikely, which means Aiden Hill is your starter for now. But Darcy Kemper's also on his way back. Lower body injury, his return, they're calling it imminent. So he could be back tomorrow, maybe the day after. My guess is, as far as Kemper, they have a back-to-back on Thursday and Friday. I think you'll see him, assuming he's healthy, one of those games. I don't want to throw Arizona under the bus here, Scott. And I did mention on Friday, and actually the show before that, too, that I did find it interesting about Ranta, they admitted that they weren't sure he was healthy and that they brought him back anyway. For all I know, he was healthy. And it's just one of those bad luck things where he re-injured himself. We see that a lot in sports. You look at any football Sunday, a guy's been cleared by the doctor. He plays 3 plays and he's out again. I mean, Isaiah Crowell, yesterday for the Jets. You think about that. It happens all the time. So you don't want to throw a team under the bus. But it was just weird the way they said it. Nah, it's like you put it. Nah, we're not really sure. Let's activate them. Well, if you're not really sure, generally you sort of hedge on the side of caution there. They didn't. So anyway, he's gone. Ranter, if you have him, if you don't have an IR slot, you can let him go. If you have an IR slot, you put him on IR, and then you move on from there. It's been a lost season for Ranter. Like I said, Aiden Hill is the guy. If I had to choose, that's the guy I'd want here. I'm not expecting huge things, though. So I'm not. Arizona's not a very good team. I don't think Aiden Hill's going to make that much of a difference here. The reason I chose Hill over Kemper is I just wonder if Kemper is the backup. That's what he is, the backup. Now, you don't want to bring up someone like Hill, not that he's a top prospect or anything like that, but it doesn't make any sense to bring him up and then have him watch 3 of every 4 games. Once again, you're not going anywhere. You might as well see if you do have something at Hill. So you let the guy play. You let the man play. So that's how I would approach it there. And I assume Arizona will do the same. Other news, Pittsburgh, Murray is getting close to a return, low body injury. Won't play tonight versus the Islanders. That's Casey DeSmith. But it looks like he can return maybe at some point this week. And once again, whenever I hear about a goalie returning and he's close, I always look for the back-to-backs. Because that's when it makes sense, right? That's when you don't want the starter going back-to-back, so you want to get that backup in there. In this case, they're back-to-back also, Friday, Saturday. So I wonder if Matt Murray is going to be safe to activate later on this week, and we'll talk about that more on the Friday show. Buffalo, Hutton, it looks like he could play as soon as tomorrow. They're being very, coach speak. They won't really tell you who started. I don't know why they do this in the NHL. It's one freaking game. I sort of get it in football where it's 1 of 16. In hockey, it's 1 of 82. You can't just tell us something's going to play tomorrow? Is there really that much game planning over a goalie? I mean, so I just find this strange. But I think Hutton's going to return tomorrow. If not tomorrow, I don't think it'll be any later than Thursday. Their back-to-back is over the weekend, but I don't think they're going to wait that long for Hutton. I think he's ready to return now. They're going to put their starting goaltender back in there. St. Louis, a pretty angry team, it looks like. Didn't play that well versus against Vancouver and Markstrom. Well, they blame the goaltender. Chad Johnson, really, he deserves some blame. He didn't play very well, hasn't played very well this season. He was placed on waivers. So goodbye, Mr. Chad Johnson. We'll see what happens to him. And they called up Bennington from the AHL. He'll back up Jake Allen there. So like I said, they're sort of blaming him for not playing well. Anaheim, Ryan Miller, there was a collision in the crease yesterday. He got hurt. We don't know the severity of the injury. He's the backup to John Gibson. He left the game. That's why Gibson came in and got the win yesterday. He got a cheap win there if you're a Gibson owner. So Gibson came in, got the win. Miller, like I said, could be day-to-day, week-to-week. We're not sure yet, but you were riding Gibson anyway. So that's why Miller pops up on the IR, now you know why. Philadelphia, Elliott, once again, lower body injury. He's also close to a return. This one's a little bit more vague. They don't have 4 games this week. So I think he's more, it could be the end of the week or it could be next week. But Elliott could be returning soon for Philadelphia to maybe help. I'm not going to say stabilize that goaltending situation because he doesn't stabilize it, but help. He could help the goaltending situation. McElhenney, Carolina. We talked about this on Friday, that he was a little banged up. He was placed on IR, lower body injury. They called up Scott Darling. I think Mrazek is the starter. Darling may get some shots as well. It's another chance for Darling, is really what it comes down to. We'll see what he can do. This is sort of a shame. McElhenney was playing so well for both Carolina and fantasy owners, and now he's on the IR. We don't know how well he'll play if and when he returns. They sent down my favorite name, Alex Pedelnevich. I'm pretty sure I butchered that, but Alex P. Pedelnevich, something like that. They sent him down to the AHL, called up Scott Darling. I think when they called up Alex P., they just thought it was day-to-day. They weren't going to call off Scott Darling for a day-to-day. Now that's more than a day-to-day. Once again, they don't want the youngster just being a backup. They want him to play. He'll play in the AHL. And Darling will come up and back up Mrazek and maybe get in a couple starts here and there, depending on which goaltender is playing better. The Islanders, Leonard has returned. He was out. He tweaked something. Once again, state secrets. The Islanders weren't telling us, which is kind of strange. But Leonard was out. He was day-to-day. He came back. It's a backup. He didn't come back to start. He came up to backup. But he's going to start tonight, which I find extremely interesting. All right, first game back at the injury. Yeah, go play the Penguins. Oh, that's fun. Supposedly a Penguins team that lit up the Islanders last week, but perhaps this is why he's starting. The Penguins lit up Thomas Greece. So he gets back in there. And Christopher Gibson was sent down to the AHL. Weird. We heard conflicting reports on Vasilevsky. First report we heard last week was, hey, he's behind schedule. Yeah, I think we talked about it on Monday a little bit, and then the report came out, I think, after the show, that he's behind schedule. He may not be back in, certainly not the 6-week period, but after that. And then 2 days later, he's participating in practice. He could make the road trip on December 16th, which is a week. He could be ready to back up, so I'll go with the good. I'm an optimist. I'll go with the good news here. It looks like Vasilevsky is now on track to return. I mean, he's not ahead of schedule. He's in that 4 to 6 week time frame here, but it looks like he might be able to return before the holidays now. which would be a nice little holiday present for Vasilevsky owners, and I'm one of those. So we might get a break there. Maybe Vasilevsky returns within 10 days before Christmas and all the other good stuff. At least it won't be in the new calendar year. That's the bottom line here. I don't. You're certainly not activating him this week. I doubt you're activating him next week, but I think you're going to be able to get him back the week after that. And as far as injuries are concerned, that is all.
Not too bad. In fact, some interesting information there. And I got to be honest with you, George. I was wondering if you're going to bring up the Hill thing in terms of our league. And I want to answer you just because I thought it was a little bit of an odd move. And I actually spent about late last night and this morning debating whether he's going to make it. And the only reason why I made it is just gamemanship. The team that put the claim in, I'm in first place. The team that put the claim in fourth place has like five goaltenders on his team, four of them are on IR. And the fifth one was Gress, who he just picked up, which may not be the greatest pickup. I mean, given the options out there, I understand why I picked him up. So it was totally a block thing. I had the waiver position. I can mess up a guy, gamemanship-wise, who's behind me and could threaten me. So that's really the only reason. And plus, you know, as you just mentioned, I also have Denis on my team. He's only got value for another couple of weeks. If Vasilevsky does come back, especially when you're just saying. So if that happens, I'm going to have a drop. So I've got the next 2 weeks to see if Phil's really going to be anything worth keeping or so, since after Hellebuck, I have some big questions on my team. So, yeah, it was a total gamesmanship move, but I'm sort of enjoying the fact that you brought it up here. You know, the follow-up question I always ask you is goalie recommendations for fantasy owners. So, George, I know at least on our last show or two, there weren't necessarily the greatest options for goaltenders in terms of streaming low-owned number one goaltenders that could be options out there, or obviously backups that might come up and get an injury start replacement or just have a good, you know, start option for them. So if you're going to recommend a fantasy for this week, who are the top names that come up to your mind? George?
Yeah, this is it's becoming harder and harder to find these guys. We mentioned the guy, Aiden Hill. He is a pickup in leagues. What's going on? He's a starting goaltender. You now have a starting goaltender. That's why he's a pickup. Your problem is, of course, it's Arizona. You know, and as you mentioned, Hill was available in our league. Yeah, sure. Craig Anderson's available in our league. The goalies on bad teams. Those are the ones that are available, but they hurt your ratios. And that's the problem with picking up some of these guys. You know, they hurt your ratios. I think the other issue is there are so many teams now, probably about 4 to 6 teams, that really have rotating goalies, almost a 50-50 split. You know, I've been playing up Koskinen for quite a while now. Had a shutout last night. But Talbot's back in the mix now because now he started to find his game. Rittich in Calgary, right, was playing so well, but Mike Smith all of a sudden found his game, 50-50 split. Colorado's doing it with Grubauer and Vollenwald. That's a pain, you know, it's a pain in the rear. You mentioned the Islanders, Grayson Leonard. Not that you want either one, but same sort of situation. So many teams now are going with the split here that it's taking away from guys because these guys are now being claimed because they're going to start. So they're not out there week in and week out. So that's the issue here. Say it over and over again. Koskinen has to be claimed. Rittich, if he's out there, has to be claimed. Hill now has to be claimed, starting goaltender. He does have to be. And what's nice about Hill, he's a shiny new toy, right? We don't know a lot about him. Maybe he will be the next big thing. Now, maybe he won't. So, but he should be claimed out there. There are 10 teams that have 4 games this week, and unfortunately, it's really not the greatest of options here. Arizona, we already said Hill. Buffalo, Hutton returns here, so you're not going to get much play from the backup there. Carolina, could you claim Darling? I mean, you probably want to go with the Mrazek more, right? Mrazek, we expect to get the first shot to start. Would it shock me if Mrazek bombs and it's back to Darling, he gets back in there? No, it wouldn't. Wouldn't shock me in the least here. But if Mrazek's out there, you got a 4-game or a week here, he's going to get, I think, at least 2 to starts, if not 3. But Darling's also in play here. Their back-to-back is Thursday, Friday. They play at Montreal and Washington. So Montreal's better than we expected. Washington's obviously a good team. Not the greatest of choices here, but if you're listening to this, you don't have options, right? Beggars can't be choosers and all that. So Mrazek's an option. Chicago, Detroit, we're going to pass here. Edmonton, I assume Koskinen's gone. I assume Talbot's gone. So I don't think you have anybody to claim there. The Kings, their back-to-back is immediate, today and tomorrow. Quick, we know he's going to get 1 start. I'm not that Quick is going to be in the lineup tonight. Maybe get tomorrow at Buffalo. And that's not a bad start for a goaltender. Buffalo is one of those streaky teams, right? 1 week they're hot and with 10-game winning streak. The next week they can't win any games. They can't beat anybody. So they're a frustrating team right now to try and judge of what you're going to get against. So that's a problem here. Like I said, Hutton goes tonight. I think Hutton will be back tomorrow, which means if you are in the mood for a goaltender tonight, you know, once again, you're only going to get one game out of it, because I think I really do think Hutton returns tomorrow. Maybe, you know, maybe the weekend at best when they're back-to-back is. But if you do have Allmark, listen, you're running out of time here to use him. It really is for one game, if two, and I'm not really going to go for it. As for the Kings, I mentioned earlier, a couple of shows ago, that I think the reason why they kept up Cal Pettersson was purely because they want to give Quick additional rest other than just back-to-back. The problem is this. The Kings got up to such a terrible start this season, they really need their best players to play all the time now to try and get back in this playoff race. So I wonder if that's going to affect this as well. But I expect Pettersson to play tomorrow against Buffalo if you're – yes, if you're inclined to go that direction, good luck to you. Pittsburgh, like I said, I think Martin returns later this week. If someone happened to release him because they got tired because he wasn't playing well or whatever it might be, hey, you pick him up. There you go. Vancouver, we're going to pass there. Winnipeg, if you look at Broussard, I like him this week. He's going to get Chicago on Friday night. Well, once again, I assume that Hellebuck gets Edmonton on Thursday, which means Broussard gets Chicago on Friday. I think he's your number one guy as far as looking at someone low percentage-wise. That's certainly to be out there. In an overwhelming majority of league, he's the guy I would go with. Anaheim is the only team with two games this week, which is probably good since they may or may not have Ryan Miller. If you're a John Gibson owner, I don't know if you can do better. I have Gibson in the league. I can't do better. So he's going to have to start for me even in the two games. But the good news is I can be pretty certain he's going to start both of those games.
All right, George, thanks for the fantasy direction and recommendations as well. And it is an interesting situation for the reasons that you just mentioned. You know, all those goaltenders and goaltending rotation situations that you just sort of listed, you know, because of either bad play or injuries, a lot of these guys have played so much and in many cases played so well that they've already been picked up. So these usual guys that sort of regularly out on the waiver wire – the herd is thin, so to speak. So you are left with the Craig Andersons and the Arizona goaltenders and players like that, and you're really sort of like, you know, hoping that you get a couple of good starts out there. It'll be interesting to see in another couple of weeks when maybe some of these goalie situations that have been in flux the last month or so, if they settle down one way or another, if some of these extra goaltenders that have been picked up will get dropped and there'll be more options out there. Obviously, it's only sort of a wait-and-see kind of situation with that. But thank you for your direction. Nonetheless, we turn our attention to the skater recommendations. George ran down all the teams that have four games this week. And, you know, just like it seemed like kind of a meh week in terms of the goalie options to stream for fantasy pickups, it's kind of the same, you know, for the skaters this week. You know, you got 10 teams, which is a good amount, you know, the four games this week. But there are very few teams that sort of jump out at me as really good, oh, I got to pick up a player from this team because they've got a great schedule this week and they're playing four games. You know, Buffalo, I mean, I kind of like the schedule, but you just mentioned, George, 10-game winning streak, 5-game losing streak. What am I getting here? You know, and outside of Skinner and Eichel, are there many options there, especially with the team now on the downturn? So I like their schedule, but I'm not really, you know, chomping at the bit. Same thing with Carolina, four games this week against, you know, three teams that you probably score reasonably well against, but this is a team that suddenly hasn't been able to score for the last 3 weeks plus or so. You know, and these are two of my teams that are, like, I think, are some of the better options. Pittsburgh, I also like this week, but outside of their named players, there's not too many options, to pick up there. Winnipeg I like as well, but outside of Little, are there many options there as well? And those are sort of like the best four teams that have four games this week. And again, I like them, but I'm not thrilled with them. I don't know if there's too many options there. Probably better options on the sort of more standard week. The teams that are playing just three games this week, the Florida Panthers, I just love their schedule playing St. Louis, Minnesota, and Toronto. Minnesota, really, just the, at least in goaltending. I think this is the worst stretch Dubnyk had with Minnesota since he got there. St. Louis, George, you already talked a little about St. Louis and how much of a cluster it's been there all season. And Toronto, as good as they've been, you could score against them. So I'm intrigued with Florida this week, San Jose playing New Jersey, Dallas, and Chicago. First two games at home, and he's got two games in between, so they should be nice and rested. And they're starting to play better overall. Toronto with Carolina, Tampa Bay, and Florida. Sure, Tampa Bay is one of the best teams in the league, and Domingue has been putting up wins. but he hasn't exactly been keeping teams to zero or one or two goals. He's been giving up 3 and 4 goals on a consistent basis, and you know, so I still feel you can score on them even if the team's not necessarily going to win the game. And so those are some of the teams that I would sort of look at if I'm just looking in general for players to pick up in terms of specific player pickups. A guy I teased earlier in the show, Nyquist, from Detroit Red Wings, left wing and right wing eligible, only 48% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo leagues. Last 7 games, 5 goals, 6 assists, plus 6, a power play point, averaging 3 shots on goal. And as I mentioned earlier in the show, now on the top line with Larkin and Abdicator, they do have a reasonably decent schedule, you know, and they got the volume. They are one of the teams playing 4 games this week, L.A., Washington, Ottawa, and the New York Islanders, and even bleeding into next week, you're playing the Philadelphia Flyers. So if you include that Flyer game, 4 of those 5 games look like they could be particularly good. A guy I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, sort of a fantasy darling pickup from last year, Riley Smith, started the season kind of pretty meh. But he has been coming around as of late. The Vegas Golden Knight left wing, right wing eligible player, at least in Yahoo leagues, 54% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo in the last 12 games, 3 goals, 11 assists, 7 power play points, a shorthanded point, averaging just shy of 3 shots on goal per game. And as I always mention, if you're looking for shots as your category, you want a player who's averaging at least 2 shots per game, so 2.5, 3 shots per game. Good target, and obviously he's playing that top line there. They got the Islanders, New Jersey Devils, and the Rangers all on the road this week, but that doesn't scare me. I'm starting offensive players against those 3 teams this week, and then even though they're playing just 2 games this week for the Anaheim Ducks, that is, Kase, the right wing player, is only 13% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo leagues. In the last 11 games, he's got 5 goals, 6 assists, plus 5, 4 power play points, averaging 3 shots on goal per game, and back up on that top 6 playing with Henrique and Richie, Dallas and Columbus. Again, just 2 games this week, but I kind of like both those matchups as well. So a little bit, you know, thinning of the herd, not too many great options here, but those are the guys that I like best if you're looking to stream a fantasy owner this week. All right, folks, let's move it on to some of the other subjects we want to talk about. Looks like we have Jan Levine joining us again. So welcome back to the show, Jan. We're going to talk about playoff expansion and the Heinen suspension. And let's start with the playoff expansion since you're just joining us, Jan. Let's start with you here. Now, obviously, we talked the last couple of shows, you know, that Seattle obviously officially voted in as your 32nd team. And even though these whispers and rumors about playoff expansion has been around for a little bit of while, it's sort of, I'm not saying it's coming to the forefront, but people have been talking about it again, especially since there was just the Board of Governors meeting where they did vote in Seattle. But in addition to that, some of the Board of the Governors themselves were talking about this possibility of playoff expansion, with one Board of Governor owner saying, hey, I think we should expand to 24 teams making the playoffs now, which would sort of be interesting to see how they'd sort of work that all out. A little bit, if there was going to be playoff expansion, it seems like the most favored idea of it would be to have the 7th and 10th team in the conference play each other in a 1-game series for a wild card, and the 8th and 9th place team in the conference play each other in a 1-game series for a wild card position. So if there was, like I said, going to be expansion, that seems like that would be the most likely situation. Now, Gary Bettman has come out and said repeatedly he is dead set against any sort of playoff expansion. However, if you put it in the backdrop, there have been a number of other issues in the National Hockey League over the last 20 years that he said, nope, never going to happen. Gambling was one of them. The Supreme Court made its gambling decision when it came to sports betting, and now he's totally on board with it. So if the Board of Governors, who he works for, and those 32 owners who he works for, and a lot of them say, hey, we want to expand playoffs, I'm not going to be shocked if Bettman changes his mind here. So, Jan, with this idea of playoff expansion, is that appealing to you? And if they do that, should they make certain adjustments? I guess I should sort of add one other point, that the one Board of Governor who did say he was in favor of expanding 24 teams for playoffs did say if he did that, he'd reduce he'd want the season reduced to 78 games, chop off a huge amount of 4 games to the season to compensate for the extra eight teams that they're going to add to the playoffs, just sort of want to throw that extra bit in there. So, again, is this idea appealing to you? Is it good? Because this board of governor, also said, hey, there's never been a league of professional sports that has ever regretted expanding their playoffs. Does that ring true to you? Is that a smart decision to go? Are you on board with that? Or do you see that as problematic and maybe even watering things down too much? Yan, what do you think about this idea?
I think going to 24 teams is massive overkill. I think even expanding the playoffs to a certain extent may be overkill. Now, I can understand the viewpoint because, remember, the NHL expanded a couple of years ago when the league was much smaller, and now we've slowly and incrementally adding teams. So once we have 32 teams, you're only talking about 50% of the league getting into the playoffs. So I can see the rationale and the viewpoint of maybe expanding it slightly. I just think finding manners to which to tweak it, you know, you talk 7, 10, 8, 9, seems to be kind of a difficult perspective and way to modify it, just because what are you going to do? You're going to do 5-game series for those? You can't do 1-game series because you have one hot goalie, and a little bit even different than baseball. We know you have a hot pitcher and he can shut a team down. You have a hot goalie or something insanely fluky, and you have a team that maybe should have been the 7th seed get knocked out of the playoffs. I'm not quite sure if that's a fair model in which to go. I do think if they do expand it, reducing the regular season is a must. The playoff in itself right now, as I've always referred to it, as a battle of attrition. It's not necessarily the best team always that's standing at the end. It's the team that's the most moderately healthy standing at the end that has a much better shot of winning. And granted, you need your elite players to carry you, but as you've seen in a couple of years, too often we've seen teams lose key components as the playoffs wear on just because it'll lengthen the physicality of the playoffs and not have the ability to recover, even if you have a decent amount of depth. So my opinion, going to 24 is, to me, a major no-no. I could see maybe going to 20 if there's a manner in which to tweak it. First of all, to me, I think that the changes that need to be made is you need to get rid of the format that we have right now in terms of the top three in each division making it. And then the next two wild cards, I think you need to go back to kind of a 1-versus-8. I'm not sure if everybody read it, but Larry Brooks wrote a really excellent article on this yesterday, because if you're looking at it, you're looking at a Tampa Bay-Toronto round 2. You're looking at a Nashville-Winnipeg round 2. And granted, that doesn't always take place in terms of the best teams being within the same division. But now, given what we've seen and given what we expect to see over the next couple of years, you're not going to get a Toronto-Tampa Bay as a Eastern Conference Finals. You're not going to get a Winnipeg-Nashville as a Western Conference Finals. I don't necessarily think they're going to go back to the 1-16 type view, because just for the fear fact of the massive amount of travel associated with it, given the breadth and the expansion of the league. But I do think they're going to have to go back to coming up with a 1-versus-8 type of format to balance out the league a little bit better and provide some of those more exciting kind of matchups potentially existing in the last round or in the ECF or your WCF rather than in the conference finals rounds within each division to try to make it a bit more interesting. So in my view, 24 is a definite no-no. I just think you're going too broad-based and makes it a bit harder and waters down the playoffs and makes it a bit more difficult to kind of sell that as an attraction, even though you're going to have more teams. Maybe you go 20 teams, but to me, you're going to have to figure out how you're going to work that associated with not impacting the remainder of the rounds after you get through round one or a quote-unquote wild card play-in round.
Well, fantastic response. I mean, you hit so many great points there. You know, if you go to 20, I mean, God, I hate the idea. I love hockey. I love playoff hockey, but I absolutely positively hate the idea of expanding to 24 teams. It's absurd. It's watering down. In fact, one of the things I like best about expansion, you know, and I don't mind suspension, but I'm also not, you know, I've never been sort of a proponent of, like, you know, carrying a banner down the street saying, we need more teams. You know, but one of the things I like best about the expansion is that I feel like you're at a reasonable level with 16 teams making the playoffs out of 32. Because remember when we were a little bit younger guys? In the early 90s when expansion first hit and we were having like 24 teams and it was like, wow, 16 teams make the playoffs. Eek, that's a little much, you know, as much as I liked hockey back then. You know, so it seems more reasonable now. So this idea of expanding the playoffs, at least to that level, seems absurd to me. And one thing I'd even add to that, if you are going to seriously consider expanding the playoffs to that level of 24 teams or even 20, you better cut off more than four games off the season. I mean, one thing that I've really been a big fan of, proponent of, that, Pierre LeBrun has been saying, in his opinion for the last couple of years that he talks about every once in a while, is that he thinks that the NHL should sort of basically rejigger themselves or make a rule or whatever. Basically, that it should be, the cup should be handed off no later by May 31st. And as much as I love talking and watching hockey, and we do this podcast 12 months out of the year, really 11, I don't want hockey in June. It's kind of ridiculous, as much as I love the sport. And I love the point that you made about the one-game series for this wild card idea, that this one fluky thing could really affect things, and is that fair? However, I suspect the NHL's logic there would be like, hey, you're talking about the wild card teams. You know, we sort of don't care that much, so we're not that worried about, I guess, integrity there. So I think that their thinking is that they would be fine with a one-game series for those teams jockeying for the wild card position. And as George and I have said repeatedly whenever this subject comes up, I could not agree with you more about desperately wanting to go back to the conference setup for the playoffs rather than the divisional setup. I feel like I'm hammering it over everybody's head by just repeating again. I understand why they're doing it. I get it. They're trying to drive the rivalry thing, especially with the quote-unquote newer teams, in the NHL, or at least the teams that don't have the history and the length of history, and I get it. It sort of makes sense on a certain level to some of the points that you made, of having Nashville, Winnipeg in the second round rather than the conference final, having Tampa Bay, Toronto in the second round. It's a crime. It feels like a crime. So I'm totally on board with everything you said. Love the response. All right, let's turn our attention to the last thing we're going to talk about today, which is the Hyman suspension. George, I'm going to come back to you on this. I'm curious what you thought of it, because, again, another situation where I'm seeing the wide gamut of reaction to, wow, that was a really egregious play that Hyman hit on McAvoy, to, what's the big deal? Yes, it was a late hit. Yes, it should have been a penalty of some kind, but major penalty, ejection, or suspension, that's taking things too far. So starting with the hit itself, George, did you think it made sense? Does it ring true with you? And just with all the other suspensions and discipline or lack of discipline, do you think the NHL is doing a little bit of a better job and getting a little more consistent, or the answer is no, or yes, but I need to see more before I'm confident in it? Because this is obviously something that we always return to, this subject, and something me and you over the years have regularly complained about, of the lack of consistency. I almost, and I stress almost, don't care what you do or what you decide on. I just want you to be consistent about it. So, George, Hyman suspension and the Hyman hit, what'd you think about the whole thing? George?
Well, I think the biggest knock on the NHL is always consistency, right? I mean, we don't know what we're going to get from one suspension to the next. Now, I get it. It's really no two plays are the exact same here. So that's also part of the problem here. Did I have a problem with that? I think what you're seeing in the NHL is this. When in doubt, they're going to suspend. Which, once again, this doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me at all. If you're going to suspend, when in doubt, you're going to suspend, as long as you're doing it for everybody. Sometimes you and I have discussed over the years, Ovechkin, we sort of give him the benefit of the doubt. Oh, not going to suspend him. But somebody else, a Zach Hyman type, that's a little different here. We'll suspend him because it's Zach Hyman, and only true hockey fans know his name. Where, when Ovechkin's done some of the questionable stuff, they've let him go. So I think that's my biggest issue here as far as the NHL, as far as consistency is concerned, because you just don't know what you're going to get. Now, as for this hit, did I think it was suspension worthy? I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. It's hard to get out of our older thought process because, we've been around hockey forever. These new rules have changed. This is a hit that maybe a couple of years ago was okay, or at least not going to get as much scrutiny. Now, we all see the hit. The NHL, player, Department of Player Safety sees everything. All right, they're reviewing everything. It's all over social media, so there's an outcry automatically from the fan base. And I'm sure the teams are all, you know, talking to the NHL too, and they want, you know, they pretty much want their pound of flesh when something happens here. And so it's, I'm not surprised. And so I'm not angry about it. I'm not going, oh my God, you know, McAvoy, you know, he's clearing the puck from behind his own net, and, you know, maybe he should have been aware, maybe he shouldn't have. Either way, I don't think it was the brightest play. You know, I think, I don't know if I would call it completely dirty. It wasn't, certainly wasn't smart. And I think that's on the player. That's what I mean, is I don't feel bad for him. You have to know better, you know, that to do these kinds of hits. You have to know the NHL is looking at this. You have to know everybody's looking at this. So you have to be careful with hits. I think it's changed the game. We don't see as many hits anymore. And almost any hit, every hit we do see, well, it's automatically, we think it's bad, illegal, penalty-wise, and it's going to start a fight. Even legal hits start fights because no one can really be hit anymore. The game has just changed from what we grew up with. So bottom line is this. I'm not surprised he got suspended. I wasn't really in an uproar, outrageous about it. It's not because I'm not a Bruins fan. I mean, the Islanders hit on Saturday night where Cromwell hit Lee, what gave him a dozen stitches in his eyebrow, cut his lip open, bleeding all over the ice. I wasn't in an uproar about that either. I'm an Islander fan. I thought the hit was okay. You know, I didn't think it was terrible. You know, I thought it was okay. Hey, there's apparently the Department of Player Safety calling us. So I thought the hit was okay. I think it comes down to hockey is a fast game. You can't always assume. You know, and I'm looking at the hit here. The hit may be late, but it's a fraction of a second late. It's not massively late here. So bottom line is this, I'm not surprised he got suspended, but it may have been overkill, but I'll say it again. In the NHL, if you're the players, you're hitting somebody, you better make damn sure it's within time and it's low.
Yeah, you know, I have to say, and again, maybe it is our age range, and maybe it's the fact that the three of us have been watching hockey since the early 80s, late 70s, you know, and that we are sort of in that older mind frame of yours. I thought it was definitely a penalty. No question. I thought it was a penalty. But, yeah, I was hedging a little bit whether I really thought it was a suspension. Having said that, you're right. You know, hockey is such a fast game. You know, so I do think that has to be taken into account. However, you know, I mean, I thought it was legitimately, you know, certainly worthy of Department of Player Safety to at least look at. And I'm not in an uproar that it was a penalty, you know. I mean, because I do feel like if I can count 2 seconds, let alone three, and I think you can count a good 2 seconds before the hit happens, you know, even as fast a game as hockey is, you can adjust to that. I think you were sort of making a similar point recently on something else we were talking about in recent shows. You know, so I do think it was a penalty, and I do think it should have, you know, been looked at, you know. But, yeah, I was really sort of on the fence about this one, you know, although I do have to say, sort of as a side note, and, you know, I guess maybe I shouldn't be surprised because it was Toronto media that was talking about it, where the radio host was asking former NHL coach and now analyst, McLean, whether he I lost my train of thought. whether he thought McAvoy should have done more to protect himself in these, because he was sort of watching his past, you know, rather than paying attention to the guys around him. And I'm thinking, you know what? No, if you pass the puck and a couple of seconds go by, there's no reason why you should be having to protect yourself. You know, if it's a half a second, of course, yeah, you should be aware because somebody could might be coming on you. But I thought that sort of was ridiculous. You know, I don't know how important it is to the conversation we're having, but it really sort of bugs me, that whole thing. But the last question, follow-up question I want to have for today's show, going back to you, Jan. You know, obviously this is something that George and I continually talk about. And I think, you know, there's been a couple of times where with this kind of subject of suspensions and the NHL and how good they are and their discipline and consistency, I think, you know, we've had you on once or twice where you've been part of that conversation. But to get a new perspective, are you sort of on board with, you know, the general feelings that George and I have about the NHL and how they conduct themselves and how consistent they are with their discipline? Is this something that you think is good, is bad, is getting better? Or do you have similar concerns that George and I have when it comes to how NHL goes about their business with fines, with discipline, and with their refs calling the game? So, Jan, what's your perspective on this in general? I mean, feel free to talk about this specific incident, you know, but in general, you know, what are your thoughts, you know? Because, like I said, this is something George and I talk about on a regular basis, and it's nice to have a new perspective on it. So, Jan, what do you think?
Well, I think the only thing I could say about the NHL Department of Player Safety is that their main consistency is their inconsistency, and that should probably give you a good sense as to what I think, ranging from when Brendan Shanahan took over and all of the lofty goals that he had, switching to Matthew Schneider, now moving on, obviously, a couple of people down the road to George Parros, and I expected to see him hopefully be a bit more consistent based upon the role that he played in the NHL and his understanding in terms of how the game is played from a physical perspective and more from a fighting perspective as opposed to some of the hits that we've seen. And you see from the thing we talked about in the past, Tom Wilson and his playing to the line, or more precisely beyond the line. If Wilson now just played to the line or below the line, you wouldn't have a problem with him because of the fact that he's now carved out the space based upon his reputation. But he has a consistent way of going over the line and beyond the line, which is why I know a lot of people didn't shed any tears when Ryan Reeves hit him last week, which was probably a legal hit also, given the nature of his head being down and that the puck had just moved out of the way, that you could argue a penalty was warranted. So I think the NHL is making some very small strides in terms of getting consistent, but until they come up with a viewpoint on headshots and how they're treating headshots across the league and whether or not all headshots are penalized regardless of why the headshot was delivered, be it intentional or unintentional, and also trying to regulate some, especially more the hits along the boards and the boarding type of plays that are more dangerous probably than anything else. If you don't find a way to regulate that and find a way to crack down even on the skill guys. So, you know, I know George mentioned Alexander Ovechkin. Ovechkin plays a physical game, but Ovechkin also has a tendency at times to leave his feet when he's finishing or starting a check, and isn't always making a central point of contact to the chest. You have Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin at times using the slew foot and not getting reprimanded or penalized or disciplined. Until you can start cracking down on the more bigger name players as opposed to the lesser name players, you're not going to clean up the NHL and you're going to have the same problems. And the removal of the instigator rule clearly hasn't helped as well because of the fact that now you don't have the kind of cases where you had penalties in the past and you had the league penalizing their own on the ice as opposed to the league itself coming down at it. So I think the league in general is making some very small strides, but I do think there's still an inordinate amount of a long way to go to get to the place where we think the NHL should be.
All right, it's a pretty nice perspective. And it's sort of nice to get a new voice on this conversation just because, you know, sometimes, again, George and I have been doing this, this is our 14th season doing this podcast, you know, and although we have had other hosts on it, it's just been the two of us for the most part, for the last six or so years, so it's sort of nice to get a new voice in there just from, you know, to hear a new perspective on it. So thank you both for that. We're going to wrap things up. And, you know, I've been teasing it for a couple of weeks, but we're going to try on Friday. It's going to be Friday or Monday. We're going to roll out our NHL team power rankings and then spend a few shows breaking it down between all three of us. So we'll hopefully have that all ready for you on Friday. If not, like I said, it will be on Monday. Have a good hockey week, everybody. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, George, as always, for participating. We'll talk to you on Friday. And for all your listeners out there, just remember every Monday, every Friday, 2 o'clock, even though I know most of you listen afterwards, when that's when we're broadcasting live. Love to hear some feedback from you guys. If you have any questions, we'd love to possibly, if we can create a little extra time, maybe even answer some questions on there if you have it for us there. Have a good hockey weekend, everybody, or week, I should say, and we'll talk to you on Friday.